Hello, this is Kim.
Hi, Kim. This is Matthew Mayer. How are you?
Doing great.
You are listening to SoloPiano.com's official podcast, Going Solo. This is Matthew Mayer. Thanks for joining us on episode 2. Today, we are going to hear a pretty amazing story from an amazing guy, Kim Dierdorf, Kauai piano artist. And as you listen to his story, I just want you to kind of reflect on your own past and where you are today. If you've ever looked to your past as a barrier or an excuse of why you are not going towards your creative venture, listen to this interview, listen to Kim's story. I think you'll connect with him in some way. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you at solopiano.com. I have to tell you, Kim, when I first read your story online, absolutely stopped me in my tracks, but since then I've been excited to get a hold of you. And one of the things, to tell you the truth, that I struggled with in preparation for our time was, you know, typically when I interview somebody, it's this format of, oh, hey, you know, tell us where you're from, you know, what did you do and how did you get to where you are today? And with your story, there wasn't really a warm introduction for me to kick that off. And
right.
I think that's what's so powerful. So knowing that my words can't do it justice, again, welcome. And will you just kick us off to tell us about Kim?
Matthew, I certainly appreciate you including me. I believe that God has given me a powerful testimony to his grace. To start from the beginning, I was found in the garbage in Seoul, South Korea in 1964. And it was literally towards the beginning of international adoption. There was a family from Oregon that felt like that God was calling them into adoption ministry. And they moved the entire family to South Korea and opened up an orphanage there. And I was one of the first babies that were brought to the orphanage.
They literally, at that point, when you say you were one of the first babies brought to that orphanage, they literally found you in the garbage.
Yeah, somebody found me in the garbage, and they took me to this orphanage. I guess they had heard about the orphanage.
Wow.
And they took me to the orphanage, and interesting enough, one of the major news organizations was so inspired by what the whole family was doing that they took a news crew over to Korea to document Harry Holt and his orphanage. And while they were shooting the film about his life, he dies that week
of
a heart attack. And so we're one of the last people to actually ever be with him or see him alive. And we're in this little documentary film at his funeral. Now, over 50 years later, this adoption agency is the largest international adoption agency in the world. And they've adopted over, I think, about 40 to 50,000 children.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's an incredible story. So I had somewhat of a humble start in life. I got adopted by a family, a couple of people from Michigan. And from a very early age, I always felt a strong power, the strong power of God's hand over my life, knowing that I'd been found in the garbage. For some strange reason, I had this overwhelming feeling that God had a purpose for my life. You know, I grew up in a home that we went to church. I was exposed and introduced to Christianity and to the love of Christ. But it really wasn't until I moved away from home. I was about 20 years old, and I was in college, and I was on my own, and I was making my own decisions. And, you know, I was having to decide, you know, one way or the other, which direction my life was going to go. And I just felt like the power of the Holy Spirit just came into my life and transformed my heart. And when I say that I've been saved twice, you know, the first time is in my human, you know, as a human being, I was saved and given another chance at life. The second time I was saved was, you know, by the grace and power of the Holy Spirit. Mm. I was saved into the family of God, and I was adopted into his family. So actually, I've been adopted twice, and both are extremely significant, but the second one is, you know, ultimately the most significant.
One of the things that just I admire so much about you, to have a beginning like that and then to give praises outside of that situation, is not something you typically hear
in this day and age, and it's not something you typically hear every day. Seeing, you know, I look at the list of places, you know, you've toured with Toby Mac, Brandon Heath. I wrote down some companies that you've worked with, including Walt Disney, Discovery Channel, ABC. You're a Kauai piano artist. With your work now that you've done, and specifically piano, when did you start piano, and what do you believe made you gravitate towards that instrument?
Well, you know, I grew up out in the middle of virtually nowhere in Michigan. I mean, it was out in the middle of, I grew up in a really small town. I went to a school in a town of 300. So I kind of grew up a little bit isolated from other people, and we had an old upright piano in our house that my mom had gotten, and she kind of liked music, so she bought this piano, and it was never ever in tune. The piano was just probably from the 1900s, and it was impossibly, you know, out of tune. We tried to have it tuned a few times, but it was just in not very good condition. And for some reason, I grew up with a extremely limited exposure to music. We had maybe 10 or 15 records at the house, and most of the records were like hymn in nature. I mean, they were religious records, and they were like songs from the hymnal. And my mom tells me that at the age of 3, I would go to the piano and I would be picking out melodies off the records.
Oh, wow.
I think early on, you know, since I was isolated, we didn't grow up with, you know, radio and TV, and of course, no internet and, you know, video games or any of that kind of thing. I didn't really gravitate towards reading. But when I first started playing the piano, when I would hit the notes on the piano, I remember as a young child, I would hit the notes and I'd hear them ring. I'd hear the strings vibrate, and I would just feel the emotion of that sound, and it just transformed me into another place. I kind of grew up in a home life that was a little bit volatile from time to time. And for some reason, music just really brought me into a place of peace. And I just remember, like I said, hitting those notes and just letting them ring. And it was magical. I was hooked. I couldn't stop, you know, playing the piano. I played the piano all the time. I tried to learn, you know, songs off records. And my mom even tried to get me into piano lessons for 1 year, but it was this older gentleman. He was like in his 80s, and I was 4 years old, and it just didn't work out. And so I would have rather tried to play songs that I enjoyed anyway. And so for many years, I just kind of struggled along, trying to learn music by ear.
And so did you... was that the majority of your education was self-taught and playing by ear and listening to those records in your house and going over to that upright?
Yeah, that's the majority of my learning. I mean, I did make it through John Thompson Book 1 about 3 times. and then we got to Book 2, and I just kind of gave up on the books. Pretty much... You know, learning songs off records. My bedroom was in the very end of the house, and it wasn't a very large place, but I convinced my mom to let me drag the piano back there.
Oh,
and
wow.
So I basically had the piano, I had the big upright piano, and I had my bed, and I had probably 3 or 4 feet of walking space in my bedroom, but it didn't matter because I was happy. I could pretty much, you know, reach the piano at any time.
Oh my God. Well, when you're talking about those strings vibrating like that and you getting, you know, that feeling and that excitement, do you still get that today?
Oh, absolutely. It's something that speaks to my heart in a way that that few things do. It's a very emotional thing for me. And you know, there's been periods in my life when I thought, well, maybe I could just walk away from playing music or try something else. And I can't. I can never leave. It's never lost its beauty or its an imagination for me. It's just never lost its inspiration to my heart. I love it. I love the piano.
You mentioned that sometimes growing up, it could be a bit volatile in your home. Was the piano an escape, so to speak? That was what you turned to when things might seem a little chaotic or you had questions about life in general? Was that your medium in which to do your own discovery?
Yeah, I would definitely say that it was my sanctuary. It was the place that I would go to first to find comfort, to find peace, to escape, you know, all the external craziness that was going on. You know, if I would go to somebody's house or go to another church or go to another building, if it had a piano in it, I would go to the piano and I'd be there till the time we got there, until the time we left. Pretty much, it was the place where I truly felt something special, something, like I said, peace and comfort. I truly believe a connection with God, because I believe that God put that in my heart and gave me a passion for it, and in some way allowed me to have more of a connection and a communication with Him. Mm. I often tell people the greatest blessing in my life is knowing that I was found in the garbage, and that I will never be in another point in my life where I'll be that vulnerable, where I have no ability to help myself in any way possible, but that God chose to save me out of that situation.
What would you say, Kim, to those that have grown up in an unstable environment or a volatile environment, as you mentioned, or those that grow up and look to the past as somewhat of a crutch towards their creative pursuits or towards their dreams and goals? What would be your message to them?
Never give up. Always listen to your heart. Always believe in what God has purposed for your life. There were plenty of times in my life I could have given up or gone a different direction. And I think one thing that I would say is to trust what God has put in your heart and just to be true to that.
I read on an interview, I've got notes here sprawn throughout my desk with so many great nuggets of and words of encouragement that you've given to others. And one of the things that you say is, it doesn't matter where or how you start out in life, God has a purpose and plan for everyone.
Yeah, that's right. It's really kind of the secret to life in a lot of ways. It's somewhat sometimes the hardest thing to believe, that God would have a purpose for your life when you feel like everything is against you and you don't feel like you may have the support system around you that other people have. And at the same time, to realize there's so many things that He's given to your life in a unique way. It may not be music. It could be in many other areas. But just find that thing in your life that resonates, that brings you joy, that brings you peace, that brings you fulfillment. But when I say that God has a purpose for your life, it's not something that I read in a book. It's not something that I heard from somebody else's story. It's something that's happened to me personally. And I just want to let people know that they don't have to live in discouragement, and they don't have to live in fear, and they don't have to live at a place where they have no hope.
Yes. You're so real when you talk about this stuff. When you talk, you give a vulnerability to others that I think sometimes thirst to be like, I can connect with Kim. But when you talk about that discouragement and you talk about, you know, in cases of, I think every artist, I've battled with all sorts of those feelings of, well, you know, the support system just isn't there, or a negative feedback loop in the industry. What do you say to those people that, especially those in the creative field, whether it's, again, I've said this before, writing your first book or coming out with an album or pursuing that passion, how do you fight through that? What is your way to fight through it when discouragement knocks on your door?
I think there's a couple ways. One of them is to realize that there's many definitions of success, and especially in the music arena, that success doesn't always mean, you know, selling millions of albums or being on television shows or being on tours. Or success means that you found the direction that God has purposed in your life. Mm. And no matter, you know, how limited you think that is, that the power of God can speak through that gifting, and it can inspire, it can lift other people, it can, you know, communicate God's love, even if you think it's not enough. I mean, I looked at many other pianists that are technically much more gifted in my mind, that can do, you know, many other styles of music that you know, they can play in any arena. And I think, well, why would God choose to use me with the limited tools that I have? And I was, this is just to relay a short story. I was on a tour, and I was speaking on behalf of Holt, and the director of the tour knew that I could play the piano, but I didn't have a lot of opportunity to play the piano. It was during the Christmas portion of the tour, and we were in Lakeland, Florida, and there was about 5,000 people there. and he came up to me and he says, "Well," he says, "we have about 10 or 12 minutes before the program starts. Would you like to play something?" "Well, yeah, I'll play something." He goes, "Well, what are you going to play?" And I says, "I'm going to play Silent Night." And then he immediately said, he says, "Wait, you're going to play 12 minutes of Silent Night?" He says, "I don't want the people to go to sleep. I'm going to play Silent Night. I'll play some other Christmas songs, but I'm just, you know, do a medley and weep, you know, through a few songs." And I said, Eddie was his name. I said, "Eddie," I said, this is how I see this. I said, "I'm like the little drummer boy. I have one drum." I said, "I wish I had all the other drums. I have one drum." I said, "All I can do is take my one drum and place it before the Lord and ask him to bless it." So I went up and I went on stage and I played my 12 minutes. And the response was so positive that he had me play for the rest of the tour.
Amazing.
And sometimes I think you can't be shy. And I think a lot of people crumble under fear, under fear of not being good enough, under fear of not thinking that their style fits a certain situation. You know, most of the time going into most situations, I feel completely inadequate. And in my own strength and my own ability and in my own mind, I feel completely inadequate. But I've learned, again, that God will allow the power of His Spirit to work through that situation, to give you more confidence in trusting Him, and to allow you to be successful. I mean, there's been so many times in my life where I thought this shouldn't even be possible. You know, I've been asked to teach at two colleges. I don't have a college degree. And I know several friends of mine that wanted to teach, but weren't allowed to. And so, you know, there's just certain situations that I know it has to be, well, I mean, all situations where I know that it has to be through the power of God that allows me to move forward.
So even during that feelings of inadequacy, again, which I think all people have, at some point, whether it's their career or passion, even during that time, it sounds like that you surrender to it, that you're honest with it, and in surrendering, something even greater happens out of that.
That is so well said. That's exactly right. I would say 100% of the time, I don't feel prepared for the situation. I mean, I'll prepare as much as I can.
Right.
I would say that when God gives you opportunities, and a lot of times He gives you an opportunity in an area that addresses one of your greatest fears. A lot of times people say, well, God doesn't give me opportunities. And I think He does give people opportunities, but they say, that must not be God's will for my life, because He wouldn't have me do that, because that's something He knows that I can't do, or I'm too afraid to do. And I think once people accept the fact that they can rely and trust in God's leading them in their life, they start realizing that, you know, once they accept the challenge, or once they accept the opportunity, and they see God moving through that situation, it gives them a lot more courage. It gives them a lot more clarity to make the next decision, and to have a lot more faith that when He opens the door of opportunity, that He will be there to allow you to be not just to make it through, but to be extremely and incredibly successful through that situation. Eventually, I ended up on a tour called the Winter Jam Tour, and it's actually the world's largest tour for its time of the year. And right now they're on tour. They're doing about 50 cities, and they'll have between 10 to 20,000 people a night. And when I was on tour with Toby Mac, I was with him the night he won his individual Grammy Award. And I was backstage, and they were all celebrating. And I realized I was on that tour to share my testimony. They did have my CD available as a gift for people who would sponsor orphan children. But that wasn't my main purpose. My main purpose was to speak and to share my story. And I thought to myself, I'm surrounded by everything that I ever wanted to be, all these successful musicians, you know, winning Grammy Awards and being on a tour. And you know, God has me speaking. And I realized that I was surrounded by everything I ever wanted to be, and yet I wasn't doing that. I was doing something else. And again, I just say that God can use your life in any way possible, as long as you're open to allow Him to direct.
Like you said, you're surrounded by these folks that are winning these Grammy Awards, and you're one of these, you know, in everyone's mind, you are at where so many musicians want to be, and yet you recognize that this is just a platform for even something greater, of a greater message that maybe necessarily you couldn't have planned for.
No possible way I could have ever planned for that. In fact, I would say public speaking would have been the top of my list as far as greatest fears in my life.
Kim, tell us a little bit about the songs that you've written.
The ones that I've written, I did just for fun, just to be creative, just, you know, to exercise creativity in something other than arranging, you know, songs that have already been written. But I have an all-original CD called New Beginnings. And most of those songs, I'd say, probably 60 or 70 of those pieces were recorded pretty much the first time through.
Wow.
I would just put it on record, and you know, I may come up with like a little, you know, a few notes of an idea, and then I'd hit the record button, and I would just play it. It would be recorded the first time through, and I would think, well, I'll get that idea down, and I'll come back, and I'll refine it, or I'll, you know, play it again and make it better. And a lot of times, I'd say most of the time, I'd go back and I couldn't do it. I couldn't play it better. You know, I mean, it wasn't perfect.
Right.
But there's really nothing that I could have, you know, that I could do that I would like better. So I think sometimes it's just allowing the inspiration to just flow through and having the ability to capture it.
you know, as you mentioned earlier, that you've felt this music in your heart since day one, and even as you write, it sounds like you use that same truth and that same you give it the proper attention to let it produce.
Yeah, it's a sensitivity, it's a vulnerability, it's a kind of just a releasing your mind. The first CD I recorded, I didn't record as an actual project to be released. I actually just recorded it as a personal worship time. And I thought, you know, there's some songs that I really love, and I'm just going to record these as my own personal worship. And I think for me, it's given me a lot of peace knowing that I don't have to strive to try to make it in the industry. The only purpose for this passion is to worship God, I'm happy with that. And so I did it as my own personal worship time. And somebody heard it and they said, well, you know, I'd like to hand these out to my employees. Do you have some CDs? And so that's how that first project even became a project.
I think a lot of times, you know, composers struggle with the, you know, creating something that maybe the mass ears want to hear, as opposed to creating something that they truly just let flow through them. What would your advice be to any composer out there as they struggle with that?
I say, just be true to your heart. Don't try to copy somebody else. Just allow your own individuality to come through. People always try to strive to find their own style or their own, like you said, do something that they think will catch on, that, you know, they can get a million YouTube hits or whatever. That first CD was, again, my personal worship time. And it's kind of interesting that about a couple of years later, I'd gotten a call from the marketing director at Curb Records, and he says, you got to see this article. And it was in the one of the country magazines, and it was this lady in Nashville, and Sheila Shipley, and she had been on the marketing and promotions team that had launched 135 number one records in country music.
Wow.
135. She was the first female to ever had a major record label in Nashville. They were interviewing her about her musical influences and the things that that inspired her life. And she talked about signing Alabama and Elvis and the Beatles and all these other people that she had in her life. And then they were finishing up the interview, and they said, you know, what CD do you play incessantly? That was the exact quote. And I almost fell off my chair, because in the article it said, well, he's an independent piano artist, and his name is Kim Dierdl.
No way.
You never know where your music will go. You never know what impact on somebody's life it will have. You just never know.
Here, you know, you just gave an example of someone that has worked with the best, the very best in the industry, and her inspiration came from you. The seeds you plant in your life, you never know how that's going to affect somebody.
Yeah, and never be discouraged and think that you're not, that your music isn't going to the places you think it should go. I just partnered with a ministry out of Florida, and it's probably one of the most exciting things that I feel like I've ever personally done. They do audio Bibles, and the way they do the audio Bibles is they have this little player, this audio player, and it's solar powered. And so these Bibles are in the native language of whatever country they ship these little units to. And they said, we just shipped some of our units to China, North Korea. I said, well, how do you get them into North Korea? You know, the Bibles. And he says, well, if they ever play the unit, it comes up with music. And I says, well, how much music do you have? And they says, well, we don't have very much music because, you know, most people want royalties, you know, for us to use the music. I said, I would be thrilled if you would include some of my music on your audio Bibles.
Wow.
And so they sent me a unit a few months ago, and they said, you know, these are going into Syria. So, you know, this little piano music that I produced in my bedroom in the solitude of one room, it's now going to Syria. I just want to encourage people to just have a heart of contentment. Again, you know, I think the harder people strive to try to make it in an industry, it brings a lot more stress into their lives. Somebody told me something about 20 years ago that really changed the course of my thinking. And they basically said, you know, with God, there's no missed opportunities. I used to think, well, if I didn't go to this function, and I didn't talk to this person, or I didn't hand my CD to this guy or this lady, and, you know, I didn't take this meeting, and I missed a chance to talk to so-and-so, and I'd beat myself up about it and think, wow, I really missed that opportunity. Mm. Or, you know, the times when you had a chance, your song is being considered, you know, at a national level for something, and it just doesn't work out, you know, something happens and it just doesn't work out. And I used to just get so discouraged that, you know, I just feel depressed. Mm. Until I realized that, you know, if you're allowing God to lead your life, there are no missed opportunities. And that's just given me so much peace and comfort to know I don't have to worry about missing an opportunity.
It's just as you say that, it's like you can almost feel a burden lift off your shoulders. I mean, when I first released an album years and years ago, I'd be like, oh, I got to get this album in this person's hands. Oh, no, this person knows this person who knows this person. Maybe if I do this, they'll get that album to them and maybe they'll call me, or all those just crazy 3-4 degrees of separation that you can conjure up in your head, you know, at a young age, because that's a lot of times that's what you're taught. You know, you're taught like, I've got to know the right person, or I've got to know this. And so much of what you say goes against that mainstream thought, but it allows the musician to be him or herself.
Well, you're right. It goes completely contradictory towards the natural industry, the natural thought. And, you know, people always say it's who you know. And I just encourage people to know God, because God knows everybody. And he can, just like Joseph, you know, he took Joseph out of a prison, and you know, the next day he's the second highest ruler in the most powerful nation on earth. You know, God can take you from somewhere lowly to somewhere exalted immediately. You know, and so I think another thing that I've learned is how to wait and how to be patient for God's leading, and not to be discouraged when you see all your friends passing you by. And, you know, I've had friends of mine win Grammy Awards and be recognized in the industry in you know, tremendous ways, and not to feel discouraged about that. That God can move you from a humble situation to an exalted situation immediately. I was sitting in my room in July, and I was freelance. You know, I was doing freelance audio and music, and things had kind of dried up, and I was having a hard time financially. And I had prayed to God for clarity, and I had taken my business card, and it had, you know, a bunch of different things on it. It had, you know, composer, producer, engineer, mixer, mastering, you know, pianist, all these different things on it. And I had just started getting invited to speak. My little story on YouTube had gotten people contacting me from all over the world. And I thought to myself, you know, I think I want to be able to share my testimony, and I want to be able to share my music. And so I put two things on my business card, pianist and speaker. And I was sitting in my room, and I was 2 months behind on all my bills. And I got a call to volunteer for the Holt International table at an event in Gatlinburg in 3 weeks. And I realized I didn't even have the money for gas to drive from Nashville to Knoxville.
Oh my gosh.
Or to Gatlinburg. And, you know, for 2 weeks I prayed about it, and about a few days before I was supposed to let them know, I emailed one of the people at Holt, and she FedExed a check to me for $200, and I drove my little car over there, and I sat behind the table, and I was there to help, you know, sign up people that wanted to sponsor orphan children. And the director of the event said, hey, would you be willing to share your testimony in the morning and during the appeal? And I said, yes. So I met him at 10 o'clock in the morning, and we walked backstage. And as walking backstage, he opened the window, and there was about 6,000 people sitting there. And we walked backstage, and he was asking me, you know, what I was doing. And I said, well, I feel like God's giving me more opportunities to share my testimony. He goes, and I said, I bought some CDs. He goes, oh, you bought some CDs. He goes, what if we offer some of your CDs as a premium gift for people that, you know, sponsor children? And I had like 100 CDs left.
Yeah.
And I had just walked through a room where all the artists and speakers had tables, and there were literally stacks of cash on the table. And I was 2 months behind on all my bills.
Oh, man.
And I thought, well, how is this going to work? You know? And so, I got up on stage, and I realized before I shared my testimony, these were older people, and my little video had small words, and I thought, they're never going to be able to see these words. And I told the director of the event, I said, you know, I think I'm going to narrate this. He goes, have you ever done that before? And I go, no. I said, I've never done it before, but I think it might work. And I was just praying that God would help me do it, and I was terrified. I stood on stage. The Spirit of God was so powerful. I finished sharing my testimony. They had record number of sponsorships for that weekend. And the director of the event came to me the next day, and he says, I want you to go on tour with us. And that started a 73-city tour over the next 6.5 months.
Oh, wow.
And it ended up with the Winter Jam Tour, and I was, you know, speaking in front of up to over 20,000 people a night.
Unbelievable. My message to people that want to do this stuff full-time is, it is a sacrifice, and it's me getting into my 2000 model Honda with 190,000 miles on it, and because I don't have car payments. Those are the little sacrifices that so many people don't understand, what people like you, and this is something that I do early in the mornings, late at night, and you know so well that struggle and that the reality of that.
And I just bought a 2005 Scion XD with 160,000 miles
sweet.
On it. So, you know,
awesome.
I love that car. I have to tell you, I love that car.
Oh, I love it. You know, something that gets you from point A to point B, and it's not gobbling up your savings account, man. There's a beauty in that.
Oh, my goodness. It is just wonderful. I can't even tell you how much I love that car.
We're both driving 10-plus-year-old vehicles, man.
We just bought my wife a car. It's a 2003 Mazda Miata. Her last Miata had 255,000 miles on it.
Don't tease, man. That just sounds too good. That just sounds too
good. Oh, my goodness. So, yeah.
How much does gratitude play a part of your life, Kim?
I think it's almost everything because, you know, You know, I have people tell me, and I've had many people tell me that, you know, I had a choice to be bitter, and I had a choice to be negative about some of the things that I've gone through,
yes.
especially as a child. You know, and I had a reason to come out in life and have a big, huge chip on my shoulder. I think gratitude is everything, because it puts you in a position of knowing where your power comes from. You know, when you know that God supplies everything and you're grateful for every little thing that comes your way, it changes the whole way you live. It changes the whole way you look at life. It changes the way you look at other people. It changes the way that you look at your gifting. I think the happiest people are the most gracious people, the people that have the most gratitude for acknowledging, provisions of God in their life.
That's one of the powerful things about your story, is that if people can hear you and hear your story and hear how you overcame that bitterness, that negativity, because if anyone has an excuse, it would be you. I love what you said about the choice that you've made. That is a choice that has made all the difference in your life. And if you can do that, if you can do that from your beginning, I certainly can do the same thing. And everyone else that has a passion, they have that choice too. And so I just thank you for being a living example of that.
I so appreciate that, Matthew. I so appreciate you, your willingness to be able to share my story. I just so appreciate your heart. I really appreciate what you're doing.
Thanks for your honesty and your vulnerability and your, just your time, man. So, all right.
I feel the same way. All right, Matthew.
All right. Thanks, Kim.
All right.
Thank you for listening to the Going Solo podcast. This is Matthew Mayer. For more of Kim's story, please go to goingsolo.me. That's www.goingsolo.me. You can also watch the short video that he was referring to in the interview. Thanks so much for your support. We'll see you at www.goingsolo.me.